Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Shot here.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
Bang! Hello and welcome to Spray the Ball, new show, same bottom feeder athlete, and last but not least, awful fucking takes. I'm joined today by a man of many talents, but his best talent seems to be taking selfies of us all. Sasquatch, how are you, man?
Not too bad.
Good to have you.
Thanks for having me on.
Fabled friend of the show, only friend of the show right now. give us a bit of a background to your fabled New York Knicks love affair.
New York Knicks. Yeah, it's a very strange one. I suppose, like most people, kind of, in Ireland, say, for example, NBA is not maybe the first sport you're drawn to as a kid. It comes much later when you hit the kind of like mid to late teens, maybe, and you're drawn in by a player, and usually that player makes you fall in love with that club.
That's very true. Yeah.
But my player was Derrick Rose. Pretty much, I kind of started getting into basketball during his MVP season, and then he did his ACL, and like a lot of people, I was just a casual fan of basketball and kind of was just kind of rooting for various different players and stuff like that. And then after a while of kind of continuously watching and then kind of learning a lot of the backstories and stuff like that, I fell in love with what the Knicks represent, in that, like, it's New York, it's tough, it's and they haven't been that for a long time.
No, they're mired in mediocrity, and I don't understand how anyone tolerates it. But I did hear a rumour from your hometown that you actually, the real reason you like the Knicks is that you have photos of James Dolan all over your wall, and he may or may not be in underwear. Can you confirm?
James Dolan is a close personal friend.
Look at the pressure.
James Dolan is a close personal friend.
Yeah, he's also a friend of the show, but probably not for long if he keeps this shit up. So,
No.
Yeah, just like, obviously we're branching out now. I think you've a few new shows coming down the pipeline, or, you know, we have our ball bags, which is three musketeers are on that one, and then the NRL show. So for any of our fans listening to this, go and give them a like and subscribe as well, and, you know, tell it to all your friends, the whole lot of them. It's worth it. So, we'll just jump into it really quickly. What do you think of the Warriors and the Mavs so far?
It's been, obviously we're recording on the Wednesday, this will hopefully be out by Thursday. Obviously last night we had the Mavs get their only win so far in the series. It's been a bit one-sided. There's been a few landslide scores. I think we're maybe at the precipice of kind of just how much one player can do for a team. I know it's something you definitely flagged on other productions, that Luka just can't keep doing this amount, the volume is too high. And I was like, yeah, but it's working, and it's no longer working, I don't think.
It's a very the modern term that's thrown around now is a heliocentric offense, where everything is just, you know, back in the day of one star teams, which is very, very much kind of dead now. It's kind of, it went from like one star to having three stars, like your Miami Heat and your Boston Celtics when they were at their apex, and then it seemed to have kind of whittled down to two star league, to like a two star teams, you know, like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are great examples of that, and LeBron and Anthony Davis. But Luke, I think it's a 5-game series. I would be very surprised. I know Steve Kerr was very emotional for his own personal reasons last night, and, you know, we won't get into that, but you could probably understand he was probably having a bad day.
It's very close to home to Steve Kerr. Very, very, very close to home.
Yeah, so. And they're such a well-connected group. You know, they've obviously been around a long time that it was just a bit flat, you know, at times. And I think game five we're going to see, like, the Mavs will probably give everything they have, but I fully expect the Warriors to really clean house in game five.
Yeah, I like, when I seen the result obviously this morning, I woke up, I kind of was like, the Mavs at least probably deserve a gentleman sweep as opposed to an official sweep, given how hard they played throughout the playoffs.
Yeah, for them to go out in the Western and say 4-0 would be a headline grabber would look at it and think they're not worth a fuck. But the reality is that they've really, like, they played their best basketball in the playoffs by a mile. They didn't look like a team that was really going to, like, ever get near Phoenix, but they took advantage of all the Phoenix problems and, you know, the emergence of even Dorian Finney-Smith and Jalen Brunson. Like, they
have a bit of a concept on Jalen Brunson.
Like, he's a good player. He won his national championship in college. Like, he was an older player that was drafted, but, you know, coming down the stretch, like, he's really shown that he can definitely alleviate some of the playmaking and scoring pressure from Luka, I think. And I think, look, Luka is obviously at his best when he dominates the ball, but that doesn't really win you championships. You know, it's great for individual accolades and, you know, awards, and he's like, there's no question mark, like, you have no question marks about Luka of, you know, showing up and being clutch, and I think all of those kind of things are not geared towards him, whereas other players would catch flack. Like, he's clearly been able to produce at the highest level, but it's, they're a team for down the line.
I think it was a strange season for Dallas. I mean, they obviously, when they built the roster we see before us, it was designed with Porzingis and Luka in mind.
Yeah.
And Porzingis has been a fail. They've moved off him. So this season, I feel as if it was go out and play the season and we'll see what we can make happen in the summer. And it just kind of grew legs. I don't think they ever envisaged it would go this far. But I think Luka is legitimate top three young player in the league easily. And that's beyond dispute, I think, from anyone.
And I think he's in a great situation. Dallas, like, when Dallas had fallen off their, you know, come off their championship high with Dirk and that core had aged, Mark Cuban was happy enough to let the cap space accumulate and let the roster rot. And then he got his guy, and I would have no doubts in him being one of the frugal owners or whatever, if he has a chance to put a legitimate superstar type player around Luka, he'll do it.
I wouldn't even say frugal, I just say he's not prone to panic. Like, I think if
no,
you're the
doesn't
GM
freak, like,
I think if you're the GM of the, like, say the Lakers or the Celtics, I think you kind of have this unerring kind of pressure to be competitive at least every 3 years, like, do you know what I mean? As in, you can't have a 3 year barren spell. Whereas I think Dallas, there's no real pressure. Mark Cuban's kind of, he's a clever bloke. Yanks and stuff like that will just know him from kind of Shark Tank, which is their equivalent of Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
But I do think, I wouldn't say frugal, I'd say just clever. Like, I don't ever remember him being afraid to pay players.
No. And he just personally strikes me as a fella, like, he obviously wants his team to have a high standard floor, and I think he understands that, like, this stuff is cyclical, that you can't, like, the Mavericks to be a dominant team for 10 years running is probably not, you know what I mean, like, it's hard to have that, like, as you were saying with the Lakers and stuff, like, the Lakers fans are rabid nuts. They just think, like, because you are purple and gold that you have an entitlement to be winning championships every year. Not really working out for them at the minute. So
they're also adjusting as well. like for years LA was a basketball town. It's now a basketball and football town, with obviously the current Super Bowl champions in that town. And then you've also got the rebirth of USC as a could be a college powerhouse football wise. So you're competing with so many other teams. Plus the Clippers are relevant now after decades of irrelevance. I know they've had a poor season this year, but it's injury wise.
And in fairness, the Clippers have a much more kind of stable organization and owner as well, where like you're not expecting them to ever get near the amount of banners the Lakers have. But it's like, you know, when I grew up, I was a United fan, and now all the kids are City fans because that's what they have. Exactly. It's the same thing, is that the younger generation of fans, I would argue, like, they have more choice. And the Rams just won a Super Bowl, so they're like, jeez, like, why would I watch the Lakers? Seems a bit dysfunctional.
Mm.
So they kind of, yeah, like, it's an interesting way to look at it. Like, they being spoiled for choice and being one of the bigger markets, you've so many more teams. But the series, obviously, that we really want to discuss is this. It's another slobber knocker, Boston and Miami. What's your initial thoughts on the first four?
It's a bizarre series. So I was listening to, not to give a plug to someone who doesn't need a plug, but I was listening to the Colin Cowherd show yesterday. The Celtics have won or drawn 13 of the 16 quarters in this series, and yet the series is tied 2-2. They're actually so much better than Miami, it's strange that it's 2-2. This should potentially be kind of a similar setup right now to the Golden State Warriors and the Mavs. It should be maybe 3-1 to the Celtics.
Miami's offense is so unreliable. It really is. Like, Butler is obviously a phenomenal player, but, you know, I just have questions about, like, their reliability in offense. But the thing that really irks me is that Boston are so, I think, and they showed it in the Milwaukee series, they had a lot of chunk leads in the Milwaukee series as well. Mm-hmm. They almost need to get the shit kicked out of them to play their best and actually have their backs against the wall. And then you see the best Boston. Mm-hmm. But you're kind of like, why
does it take to get there?
Yeah, why does it take to get there? Like, why do you have to be bet into the corner? Because the thing is, it's fine when you get a side like that with unreliable offense and you might get out of this. But if you end up getting this finals berth and you get Steph, I really don't think he's going to let you away with that kind of crack. I don't think, like, they've won their championships. If you get buried into a series hole now, you're always climbing back games as opposed to leading series constantly. I think
that would be my fear about Boston, is that they obviously swept the Brooklyn Nets, who were not up to much. Fair enough. They played Milwaukee and it was a real old school throwback series. Miami Heat, it's not too dissimilar. It's been a strange series though, but there's been no tight games, whereas they had that in the Milwaukee series. If it ends up going to 7 games and Golden State Warriors overcome the Mavs sooner rather than later, they're going to be fatigued, tired, and they've not played a small ball lineup in the playoffs, or like your traditional kind of, your new age kind of way of thinking around basketball. It could be a matchup nightmare. It's the same way I thought Phoenix would have given, with all the issues going on, they still would have given Golden State Warriors a better series to date than the Mavs have. But the Mavs were a perfect side to meet the Phoenix Suns when they met them. You know, the kind of the adage, styles make fights.
It's strange. Like, Boston are so long, and I think, like, whatever way about ball dominant players and stuff like that, they have two of the most athletic wing players in Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And I always kind of criticised them for, teams get stuck in this way of thinking that, well, we just keep building, it's fine. You're like, going, no, you're pretty good to go with those two, to be honest. you need to start getting the right pieces, and they were mired in just really, really inconsistent play. And that, in fairness, that lasted right up until before Christmas, and then they went on this absolute fucking tear.
That's your backs against the wall thing, though, again.
Yeah, and every time you see them, they're just racking up wins and more wins, and like the streak keeps going. And you're like, is it sustainable? Is this what we can expect out of that core of players now, next season, from the get-go, and the year after, and the year after that? Because then you would really think, right, they're a legitimate finals threat every year, and only until we get to the playoffs are you thinking of that team this year like that.
I don't know. The Celtics situation is a strange. I think while they're both exceptionally talented, I have reservations about the ability of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum to work together in crunch time. I think it's a difficult decision, but I think the Celtics should move off Jaylen Brown. I think they should trade him now when they'll get maximum value for him, and I think they should build around Tatum, because I think, like Luka, he's a top three young player in the league, and he's ascending.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal.
And that's where I think how they get into this backs against the wall thing is that the game plan breaks down and instinct takes over.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal athlete. And do you know what phenomenal athletes like to do? They like to read, and the best place to read is The Athletic, and you can get a month free on The Athletic if you click on the link on our podcast.
That was
forced. Well, look, fucking, I enjoyed
forced,
it.
But I'm doing that plug about 2 years now, and I don't think I've ever pulled it off to that effect. So that was unique, anyway.
Yeah, look, this is my show. It's, you know, I have to keep saying it. New route. Look, clean slate. The BFA is back, torturing the radio waves. Can't argue with it. So, if I was to push it, like, look. The Warriors, I would be shocked if this got anywhere near six games. I'm saying five.
Absolutely.
But if I was to push it, really, are you saying Boston in five? Oh no, sorry, Boston in six. Or do you think Miami, do you think this is going to be a recurring team where we're going to get another seven games?
I think we're going to get seven games. No, I'm probably going to back the Celtics overall. It's that stat I kind of threw out that came from Colin Gohard. The fact that they have either won or drawn 13 of the 16 quarters, and yet the series is still tied 2-2, suggests to me that there is something awry. Is it a huge issue that they can't overcome? I don't think so. But there is just, there's something not quite right with the Celtics, that they're allowing this to happen. Fair enough. I kind of called the coach, obviously, from the Ball Bags, is a massive Celtics fan, and I did say opening two games in Miami will be split 1-1.
Yeah.
Because of the Milwaukee Bucks series. But I did not expect it to be 1-1 leaving the TD Gardens and back to Miami, if that makes sense. I thought they'd take both
home games. I think a lot of it kind of comes down to the personality of their coach, you know, Ime Udoka as well. It's his first gig, and it's a big gig to get. Like, yes. Boys, you know, not to sound like, normally you get a, you know, it's like, oh, you're now the coach of the Hornets, and you're not really set up for success, you know, in that situation. Like, you might get 2 years and you're out the door and the rebuild is done. Like, Brad Stevens, whatever happened with the hierarchy in Boston last year, I always thought that Stevens was the next big superstar head coach in the NBA. I did. And, you know, for a while, it looked like it. But Boston was like him. It was just so, like, the potential was always evident. And then it just dropped. And then he stepped away. And he's now, you know, effectively the GM or the president of operations. He's the whole show. And he's selected Udoka, who is obviously learning on the fly, but he really, decided to get after this group, you know, in media conferences, that they, you know, defense was shite, and I think they just got sick of him calling them out, and were like, right, we're gonna this is your identity.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We're going to follow it, and I think the inexperience is clearly evident there, because they give up so many of these leads and stuff like that as well. But I think going down the line, I think they've found a good one.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I think, like, ultimately, if they come up short against either Miami or, I'm assuming, Golden State, then it's painful. But I think it actually, it might do them good. It might leave them hungry in the off season. There's also a fact that because of the volume they're playing, we're seeing them picking up these injuries. Like we've seen, there's a game three, that they lost in Boston, wasn't it? Or is it Ryan saying that?
Miami went up 2-1.
Yeah.
And Boston took a standard Boston taking it back.
Bam Adebayo was kind of the star player. But we seen both Jason Tatum and we seen Marcus Smart go off injured. Marcus Smart was also injured in the Milwaukee series. Now they both came back in quarter four, but they still had to leave with serious injuries. A la Boston loved that. Paul Pierce off in the wheelchair. But I just think the volume is starting to be an issue here. If they want to win the NBA series, they need to drop a gear and they need to just win the next two games.
Yeah, and look, I've been saying this for a while. Games like this and series like this and the series, like especially the Milwaukee Celtics series, like for us to get series like that, it's at a cost. Because of, you know, maybe, I don't know, 72 game regular seasons or whatever way you want to look at it. But if we as fans want to keep seeing these, I don't want to see series where players are constantly injured, or, you know, this Chris Paul stuff where you know he's going to miss games and you're like, well, would he miss the whole series if 62 game regular seasons were a thing? Or 72? Like, I know...
I think 60. I think keep the play-in, because I like that.
Play-in is great. It's the best thing to happen to basketball in a long time.
I think play-in. I also think round one, best of five.
Slowly warming up to that. I love the seven-game series, because game five just doesn't... I suppose it has to happen before you get appealed to it. You know that way? It's like game seven is etched into my brain forever. But like, I can understand from a logical point of view of better series that a game five in the first round is it's a very applicable thing. I don't think the teams would want anything less than game sevens because of, you know, revenue and obviously
tradition. But then the only thing is, it's a slow build. You're building a better product. There is a lot of sides. If you've been, say, like the statistically the best regular season team, Golden State Warriors, that year they went, what was it in the end? I can't, was it?
Golden State won 72 games. Sorry, they went 73-9 because they broke the Bulls record.
Yeah.
And they just burnout and LeBron.
Yeah, but. Okay, right, but pause it there. Who did they play in round one?
Oh, that year, Jesus.
A very old, a very beat up Memphis Grizzlies.
Marc Gasol at his
beat. And Randolph. Toby Randolph, is it?
Zach Randolph still playing in the Memphis Grizzlies?
Zach Randolph, I think, yeah. Very beat up. Very beat up. But I think that was for Zip. Like, who's paying attention? Whereas if you drop it to a 5-game series, all of a sudden, after game one, it's almost win or go home. Because if you go 2-0 up, series over.
Yeah, the pressure. Look, the pressure of the series just starts straight away. There's no...
So, the potential revenue for those round one games is increased because there's fewer of them. Now you probably have to go through a season where you're like, to see it then. But that would be my kind of fix. And in addition, dropping it to 60, I think you're removing this whole load management issue I touched on before with Kawhi and that. I don't blame your likes of Kawhi for that, because they're only operating in the system that's provided to them.
Yeah, and I think if players are, and obviously a lot of players are gearing towards their load management, when you buy into that, you are accepting that the records from back in the day are not going to be attainable for you anymore. There's very few players that are ever going to get, you know, the 40,000 points. Do you know what I mean? It's just not possible in load management era anymore. So if you accept that, then drop the games, because you know you're not going to get it anyways. So like the reason for 82 games is, you know, I can see why some players would be like, I want the 82 because I want my scoring title, I want my, you know, I want my top 10 statistics. It's like, yeah, but you also only want to play 60 games a year yourself, so I mean you ain't going to reach that anyways. Like, I think Giannis, in fairness to Giannis, has a chance to really crack some of these records, but like that's 10 years away before we even 10 years and maybe, you know, I don't know whether he wins another championship or he gets hurt, or, you know, he's the only player I can think of in my head that has a real opportunity. Like even Jokic, who's very much like doesn't leave the ground, and you feel like he is a chance for longevity in his style of play to have a crack at a few records. I don't think he'd ever make a dig at any sort of kind of like serious points record, because he doesn't have that in him. But like his rebound and assists, like he could ideally end up finishing in like 10 or 12 years time as, you know, thereabouts the best statistically passer to ever played the game at this pace. But I think, yeah, I'm a big fan of dropping the games, and I'm definitely more of a fan now of the five game. When I think of it in my head, the five game series will be just even 1 year. Test it. Why not?
Yeah. Now, I do have one caveat to the 60 game regular season, is that you don't shorten the regular season. You keep it as is, and you take away this whole thing of four games a week, and it's 2 to 3 games max. So you give players every opportunity to play both games, play extended minutes, have less blowouts.
Yeah, so we're not actually going any deeper into the calendar year. It's the same. And look, if you get a chance to go and see LeBron in the midweek or a Kevin Durant in the midweek, better odds of seeing him, you know.
Bums on seats.
Bums
value
on
for
seats.
Tickets.
And yeah, I suppose, like, what do you think then, obviously we're heading into the off season, what do you think, is there anything that strikes out to you in particular for next season that is something our, you know, our listeners could be keeping an eye on?
In terms of headlines to kind of watch?
Headlines, yeah. What do you think, like, next year, like, do you think maybe, like, will the Knicks get someone big in the summer, or what do you think? Anything?
I think casual fans, well, not casual fans, but maybe more educated fans, should play close attention to New Orleans, because I think we had the volume of noise, but it's gone very quiet on the whole Zion thing, and when people get quiet, sometimes things happen.
Yeah, to be honest, I just want them back on the floor. He's too good. Like, the brief amount of games that we're seeing him, like, he is a special talent.
Now, what I would say is, if you're the owner of the New Orleans Pelicans, and by extension you obviously own the Saints as well, if you let Zion walk out that building, sell the franchise and move it 800 miles across the country, 8,000 miles across the country rather, because you're not fit to own. And they've passed up two very arguably generational talents in Anthony Davis and Zion Williamson. There were two players that were to rebuild the franchise, and they've stuffed it up. Do I think Anthony Davis could have legitimately saved that franchise? No, on kind of what we've seen in LA. He's just too injury prone or too soft, depending on what way you want to look at it. But they have still let those two players go. And that would be kind of my take. It's one of the worst run franchises in the NBA, to be fair.
Yeah, I actually think that. And it's it can be, look, you can see it as obvious enough, or there'll always be defenders to say that they'll find a way to make it work. I think the Lakers are fucked.
I would think you could be right, if not for the fact that it'll always be a favorable free agent destination. We're not talking about a Milwaukee, where when Giannis goes, it could be back to the doldrums for a good few years. There are certain franchises in the end. Celtics are the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
Lakers. Knicks no longer. I would argue that it goes in stages, but the Chicago Bulls right now are very attractive. There's a few landing spots that are always favourable. Like, we're not talking about like Oklahoma. How many draft spots have they got? But what free agents are they going to attract?
Some stash of picks they have as well, in fairness to Presti.
All Presti wants is picks.
Yeah, I think just
problem
with
picks is, though, you've got to use them.
And look, Danny Ainge is the same at Boston, and he's forced basically into, what did they call it, an advisor retirement home gig. Like,
you say that, but Danny Ainge, but one, the player escapes him, but one trade got the two picks that ended up being Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So
that's very true. But obviously, if you ever said frugal, he was frugal sometimes with the actual picks as well. But I think the Lakers are in big trouble, purely because I know they're a big free agent destination, but I think that the young talent that's coming out of that West now is actually bonkers. Like, Minnesota next year, I think, will take a huge leap. That's my team, right? I'd watch. I think they're going to take a huge leap. Someone has to suffer for them to rise. I think it's LA at the minute. And I think, like, would they trade LeBron? Is that on the cards? Is LeBron James not being on the Lakers roster next year a high possibility? I think it's quite possible.
I think for some reason it just made that doesn't happen unless he initiates the move.
He fucked it up so bad. Like, I mean, the power he gave him, obviously he decided to, like, look, LeBron will do.
Hope what? PSG fans are listening.
Yeah, the Mbappe thing, we're not allowed to, I was told briefly, and I'm not allowed to talk about that. We're not allowed to talk about it in this show either. It's the spread of ball. It doesn't matter what ball is being spread. So, LA, I think, are in trouble. I think Detroit with Cunningham is very exciting young player. I think they're probably, if you are a fan of League Pass and you like, you work nights, stick him on. You know that kind of way? Have a watch at Cunningham. He's a good player. He's a really talented young player. And I think in 2 years' time, they will have brought back that nasty Detroit kind of side that we were used to seeing in the mid-2000s.
Mm.
And I like Minnesota a lot next year.
I know you do, yeah. You're a huge fan.
Really do. Anthony Edwards has rare juice in him.
Question, this is the last kind of question, I suppose, for myself. Do you think Chris Paul's drop, shall we say, with Phoenix has left a lot more questions about that organization than we had at the start of the season and as we had going into the playoffs? Do you think, is there scope that maybe they say Chris Paul just ain't ever going to win a championship, he just ain't ever going to do it?
It's a very... Look, I think the whole thing in Phoenix is that Sarver is probably looking at that side now, and he's very tight with his money, in that he may not want to pay DeAndre Ayton. And he wasn't at his best this year, especially in the postseason. And there was obviously a lot of stuff to come out about him, like, this boy loves his video games so much that he's depriving himself of sleep and not... Like, he's like, I'm on 2K and playing with my boys till like 5 in the morning. You're like, how do you do that and not think your performance is going to suffer? I'd still pay him. If I was Chris Paul, I would be going into the GM's office and going, look, I've probably made close to $500 million in my career. I do not need this massive team or player option coming my way. I'd be ripping up that contract, taking the mid-level and paying Aiton. I genuinely would. Now, look, if I was being offered that kind of money, I'd probably tell you to go fuck yourself and not take a penny less either, which is fair. But I think the context is everything. He really probably only has one more crack at this. Like, legitimately. Like, next year, he's one of the greatest point guards of all time. I think if he wins a ring, he's just behind Magic. That's it. Personally. That's all he needs to cement that.
I wouldn't agree with that, but...
Huh?
I wouldn't agree with that, but I'm not going to fight you on that.
Who's in your head? Point guard wise.
I don't know. I just think...
You think if Chris Paul, like, highly decorated Stockton career... Huh? Stockton?
Stockton.
The ring changes the argument, though, doesn't it? At this stage, like, the Stockton is very, like, so much... They're, like, clearly Hall of Fame player, like, wizard point guard, like, assist numbers through the roof. But, I mean, like, he's in this, like, Chris Paul is going to suffer the same fate as him, where you just have, like, nothing to show for. Steph, like, I don't
put talking Steph, about ring, if we're, talk, we're talking rings.
Yeah, like, I don't really, like, Steph to me is not really that, like, that traditional point guard.
Yeah, but
player to
Steph
me
has changed how the game's played.
And I
that's,
don't even...
That's got to count for more than rings.
I don't put him in that... I put Steph in a much higher bracket of conversation than Chris Paul. I think the trajectory of where you look at those two guys in 10 or 15 years' time is not even going to be close. Like, Steph is getting a chance now to get to four rings... Should really have enough juice in his legs to attack 5 and 6, to be brutally honest with you. Which, look, if Kevin Durant never left, we could be already at that point now. So,
I would can I just one last point and then I am done, because I think we're going way over to me imagined, which is that's a good thing.
Yeah,
but if the Golden State Warriors are successful this season and win the NBA championship, mm-hmm. I would argue for Steph's legacy. This is the most important ring. It's the least dominant Warrior side to win the championship in Steph's reign.
Yeah, I would agree. And it would be for all of his rings the most important. And then you're just looking at volume, bonus territory for him, like, really, isn't it? And this would be the year he's like, let's finally get my finals MVP. You know, I had been clamouring about, like, you know, Steph gets so much attention in postseason games, you know, they come up, like, you can't give him a second of room, like, full court press, like, you can't do anything else, and the attention then that he gets just gives his teammates so much more. So I think he's a sufferer of his own success, nearly, is that, like, you can't win the finals MVP without being statistically the best player on the court. And that has suffered for him when it gets to the final series. But yeah, I think where he's a chance to hit rare air here. And yes, that's why I don't even put him in the conversation of, like, best pure point guard, like, just behind Magic. I think he's so much more than that. He's transcended this position stuff now, to be honest, because, you know, he cuts off a ball like a shooting guard. Do you know what I mean? Table setter. I mean, he sets the table in a different way, the fact that he just starts hitting fucking logo trees and the whole complexion of games change.
Yeah. All good.
Yeah, so look, we have let's just say the schedule is fluid for the minute, but obviously if you like the show, you know, let us know on our Instagram that I've been told multiple times I need to start liking myself. So look, I'll make the effort if the listeners make the effort. And so we'll be back soon, and that is all from me.
It's all from me.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.